Well, welcome, Dr. Henry. It's a joy to be here again, Dr. Moeller. And this is after you have served two full terms as a member of our Board of Trustees. And that's an enormous investment.
11 years.
11 years. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that service. And during that entire time, you've been a source of great wisdom and constant encouragement.
Thank you, Dr. Moeller. It's been such a joy to serve with you, and I appreciate your integrity, your leadership. I often said if I was in a debate, the first person I choose on my team would be you. And to these wonderful trustees and their spouses, to hang out with these kind of people. And the Boys College, Dr. Bruce and Dr. Hunter, this has been an enriching thing. And to come to chapel and hear the singing, it's worth the whole trip just for that. So I'm honored that the Lord gave me this privilege. Loved it.
Well, you have served, I should say, as kind of famously you have served as chairman of the Boys College Committee of the Trustees.
Yes, I have. And that's I've watched that school and the leadership there, and I tell you, I am really impressed with the caliber of people that are leading the school. And when I hear the students, I'm even more impressed. What a great group of people. I'm going to miss those meetings.
Well, you can always come back and visit.
Well, okay. If you'll let me, I'll come back.
All right. So I wanted to take advantage, Dr. Henry, of the fact that you are here. We have this chapel service, and it's near the end of our term. And it's a good time for us to think about some things. And, you know, an awful lot of people in this room are incredibly young, which is a gift. It gives folks like us just tremendous hope. And this is fantastic. The one thing that comes of being young is that you were born after other stuff happened. And a lot of the stuff that shapes this institution right now is stuff that happened before a lot of these students were born, and even when a lot of these faculty members were very young. And I want not so much to just sit back and tell war stories, as I want to trace some important developments, because you're one of the last people who can connect some dots. So, you were born where?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, I associate you with Tennessee, but you ended up going to Georgetown College.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And New Orleans Seminary.
That's right. And then you went to be a pastor in Tennessee.
Two Rivers Church in Nashville, across from Opryland.
Right. And you have kind of family at Opryland.
My brother was vice president of Opryland.
Right.
So I had to.
You were working both sides of the street.
That's why they sent me to Orlando.
Right. Well, and while you were at Two Rivers, which, by the way that plays out is that Nashville was far more than now. It had the feel for Baptist of a headquarters city. And you weren't playing by the headquarters rules.
Not exactly.
Not exactly, yeah. But the Lord blessed your ministry.
Wonderfully.
Wonderfully. You might need to get that microphone just a little closer.
Has it?
Yes, that's great, Ken. And this church was growing phenomenally. It was one of the fastest growing churches in the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. And why was it?
We did just the basics. We prayed. We believed God could do anything but fail. And we trained our people how to evangelize. We did D. James Kennedy's program, Evangelism Explosion. And we had a multiplication process where if you were trained, you trained two more people. And so we just believed that God was going to do that, and he did. We had a lady that kept a roll of who was being trained. And after I left Orlando, Two Rivers came to Orlando, she came to visit. And she and her husband, and she had this scroll with her. And she said, I want to show you something. So she and her husband took this scroll, and it was about 20 feet long. And there were names on it. And she said, these are all the people that have been trained in Evangelism Explosion and have trained somebody else. So it was over 20 feet long. And that was the multiplication process. And so we trained our people. We expected God to do something. And we saw him work. And and as pastor, I just preached the word, loved the people, and I visited a lot. I knocked on doors. If I saw a moving van coming in, I'd pull in behind the moving van and go knock on the door. Say, I'm Jim Henry, pastor of this church down the road here. Love to have you visit with us. And, you know, one thing leads to another, and the people felt an expectancy when they came to church. Expected God was going to do something, and He did. And it was, I was in awe, really. I sometimes call it a spiritual Camelot because we saw God working so powerfully there. And it was hard to leave there to go to Orlando because God was blessing so much at Two Rivers. I struggled with leaving because God was so good to us there. But I knew God sent me on a mission to Orlando.
So what year did you go to Orlando?
1977.
1977. And Orlando was a sleepy little southern town.
Yeah, it was.
And not you were that. Pastor of a First Baptist Church downtown Orlando. And I was born 30 miles away. Grew up. My family bought cars in Orlando.
I remember meeting you for the first time in front of downtown Baptist Church, First Baptist. You were a little thinner then. I was captivated by you, just meeting you that day. I'll never forget. I can still see it in my mind. It's one of those, you meet a lot of people, but I remember meeting you that day especially.
Well, a part of what I want to bear testimony to is just how encouraging you've been to me for my entire adult life. And I don't get to say thank you to a lot of men who have now gone to be with the Lord. Thankfully, you are right here.
Thank you.
And I can say thank you. Mary and I were flying home from Christmas when we were very, very newlywed. And our parents bought us tickets on a fly-by-night airline that did not even have overhead compartments. It had like a net. And the plane landed in Orlando, then flew from Orlando to Louisville. And there was a mechanical problem. And so we had hours on the ground. And so we got away and we went over to First Baptist Orlando. And I just landed on you, the two of us. And you walked us around and showed us, because the building was brand new on John Young Parkway.
Right.
And we'll never forget that. You just took time right out of your busy ministry. I just landed there, and next thing I know, you're showing us around. I'd never seen anything like it.
Well, I had neither. It was an astounding experience for me to see what God did in Orlando. It was a thrilling thing that the Lord let me get in on, and so I was really overwhelmed by the goodness of God, Dr. Moeller, because I felt like David, as God's hand was on us, and it was anointing of the Holy Spirit, and I know that. But David said, who am I and who's my father's house that you set me in this place? And that's the way I felt about my whole life has been, who am I but the greatness and sovereignty of God? So Orlando First was a wonderful experience, too.
But it wasn't all easy. And so, I mean, I know when you went to Orlando, the population of Orlando was something like 150,000 to 200,000 people. And it grew to 4 million. And so you moved First Baptist Church out to John Young Parkway, built this magnificent facility. Florida's exploding. That's my home state, you know. And I sang as a 10-year-old in the old downtown First Baptist Church because we used to have Association of Choir festivals. Yeah, so that was my introduction to that church. And you know, your predecessor was my pastor's best friend, Dr. Parker and Rupert Coleman.
Okay,
we're best friends.
I didn't
so
know
my
that.
Pastor and your predecessor. So very interesting, and they were quite distinguished Southern pastor types.
Yeah,
they fit a certain mold that you and I are among the last people who ever knew.
Yeah.
And but titanic figures, you know, in their own right. Dr. Coleman, the pastor who baptized me, Bruce Ware is the Rupert Coleman Professor of Christian Theology. So again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Things come around in the sweetest way. And Dr. Coleman had done his PhD under A.T. Robertson. So you just think, okay, here we are. And then you went to First Orlando. But Orlando's being transformed. I mean, it's becoming the Los Angeles of the East Coast. What was it like to do ministry there with everything exploding around you?
Well, it was a constant adjustment because we saw this city exploding. When I went there, we didn't have any African-Americans in our church. There were two. One was on the staff and the custodial, and one was a lady who was an English teacher that was in the choir, but she had not joined. So that was, I don't remember any Hispanics in the church. So as the city began to change and diversify, we began to see God working and reaching out to a population, and our church was very loving and very open, and so we began to receive more and more diversity of a congregation. So we tried to not change the message, but change the way we were doing church. And we went to a contemporary service after we had blended services. We had a guy come and say, if you do the same thing twice, you'll get the same results. So he said, if you want to reach more people, you need to have at least one of the services to be different than the other. So this was a big change for me because I think same message, same choir. So it was kind of scary because I didn't know how that would fly. I'd been there hopefully long enough that I had enough chips that I could survive anything. So I said, we're going to try a contemporary or modern service. And I want everybody to pack into the sanctuary. I want you to see what it's like. If you like it, come back. If you don't, you can stay. We're going to keep the other service. I didn't want to make the mistake that I think some guys had done, and that was just change everything suddenly and take away what they've been used to. Truett Cathy told me one time, he was riding around one day with Mr. Cathy, and he said, preacher, he said, let me tell you something. He said, I learned in the chicken business. I said, what was that? He said, one time we added something to the menu, and I started looking at the bottom line, and it was costing us a lot of money. And so we quit doing it. He said, I began to get hate mail and phone calls. People said, we're going to Kentucky Fried Chicken from now on, and that kind of thing. And so he said, I learned a lesson. He said, don't take away something that the people enjoyed. And so I didn't forget that. So we kept the one service and added the modern service. And it was really strange. We saw some people I thought would be in one service, didn't. And the others I thought would be in the other, didn't. But we had a new members class. To become a member of church, you had to go through a membership class where you signed at the end of that class your commitment to Christ, salvation, baptism, support the church, giving, etc. We kept records. Two-thirds of our new people that were coming to church were coming out of that modern service. So we didn't lose anything with keeping the traditional, and we added something by adding the other. Now today, at First Baptist, they have three morning services and a Saturday night service, have a Hispanic service on Saturday night, and on Sunday morning they have three services. And the Hispanic services run about 1,800 now. And Dr. Youth's doing a fabulous job there. But I think we just tried to navigate as we moved along. And the Holy Spirit gave us guidance.
You have such a gracious spirit, but you also created a lot of controversy in Orlando by moving the church. Because there were folks who believed God intended it to be downtown.
Yes, and it did. That was a scary time.
I remember as a very young man observing your leadership during that time. And I was impressed. You were always gracious, but you weren't ever looking back either.
No, because I felt like we tried to stay downtown. We fasted and prayed. We tried to buy property around us. We did everything to do to stay downtown because we'd been down there since 1871. So I knew this, but we just owned 50 parking places downtown. People would come up, see, we had three services back to back. People were turning, driving away. So we finally said, folks, we got to do this. And we came to a strategic time, Dr. Moeller, and it's one of those moments you never forget. The committee said, let's buy the property. We're going out. But I brought it to the deacons. The deacons didn't have to approve it, but I wanted to go to the church and say the pastor, the staff, and the deacons say that we do this, make this move out to John Young Parkway. So I went to the deacons meeting, and we voted. At the end of the vote, it was like, I don't remember exactly, we had about 80 or 90 deacons. And it went like two-thirds yes and about a third no. I knew it was enough to carry the day, but I didn't feel comfortable. And so at the break time, I went to the chairman. He was worked at Martin Marietta, Lockheed Martin. I said, Don, I said, would you have the guys get on their knees and pray one more time? I just don't feel good about this. He said, yes, Pastor, I'll do it. So we went back in there, and the guys got on their knees. And Don said, Pastor asked us to pray about it. Some of you may want to change your mind, but pray about it and be sure, because this is a strategic moment in the life of our church. So the guys got on their knees and prayed. And when God through praying, he called for another vote. And it was not unanimous, but nearly unanimous. And felt like this is the thing to do. Years later, I saw him in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we were talking after a wedding. And I said, Don, I want to thank you. He said, for what? I said, because if you hadn't called that meeting and had those men get on their knees and pray, we still may have been downtown. And he started crying. And he said, Pastor, I'm glad we did. I said, Don, I am too, because it literally changed thousands and thousands of lives because we were capable of reaching more people, discipling them, and bringing them to place of worship.
I want to fast forward to the conservative resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention. So that had been going on for years. And you were elected president of the Southern Baptist Convention in 1994.
Right.
So how did that come about? And just talk for a moment about why the conservative resurgence was necessary and how you ended up being elected president during that time.
Well, we knew things weren't exactly right. We were hearing different rumbles from schools and things. I remember Adrian Rogers said one time, we were a group of guys, he said, guys, they're using the same words are used, but a different dictionary. So when he was elected in 79, that began, you could start helping appoint the trustees. So that was a big thing. But it moved on, they formed the Peace Committee. And I was asked to be on the Peace Committee. And I think, I don't remember if it was 19 or 20 or 21 of us. And they tried to balance it off. Some were more moderate and more conservative. Charles Fuller, First Baptist Church of Roanoke, was a chairman. And so we met, and they assigned us to go to different schools and institutions to see if there's liberalism and what they would teach in the Bible, etc. So I was chairman of a subcommittee that went to two of our seminaries. And so to one of our seminaries, I don't know if I should say it publicly or not, but I went there.
At this stage in life, you can pretty much say whatever you want to say.
Okay. I think you're right. We went to Southwestern and Southeastern. So at Southeastern, the night before we met with the president and the dean, some conservative students met with us because they said you can talk to anybody. They gave us that chart. Talk to anybody about anything. Have them talk to you. So they met with my subcommittee, and they said, here's some things that are going on that are being taught in the classrooms. And so they gave us a list of things they kept notes. So the next morning, we had breakfast with the president and the dean, very gracious to us. And so after the end of the breakfast, I said, there are a couple of questions I'd like to address. I've been assigned by the Southern Baptist Convention to do this. We've talked to some of the students. We hear some other rumbles about things. And I said, is it true that nobody, that you do not believe that Adam and Eve were real people? Because some students said that's being taught in the classroom that Adam and Eve were mythical figures. They were just allegorical. And so he didn't say anything for a minute. He looked over to the dean. He said, Dean, answer that question. And here's what he said. He said, not only I don't believe it, but he said nobody in the Old Testament department believes it. In fact, nobody believes the first 11 chapters of Genesis. I was shocked. But we realized we had a really deep problem. So we reported back to the full Peace Committee. We brought our report to the Southern Baptist Convention. Long story short, when we voted on that Peace Committee report, it was nearly unanimous. because we had seen things that were going on, reported full integrity, and the convention said, this is the way we're going, and that's started. So by the time I became president, it had pretty much, the presidents had been elected, were conservatives all the way in. They had some really close calls, some close votes, if you may recall, along the way. But the time I came in, I followed Ed Young at Second Baptist Houston. He was president just before me. And when I was nominated, Fred Wolf was at Cottage Hill Church, and Fred and I were nominated. Charles Stanley nominated Fred. And so Jack Graham at Preston nominated me. So when I heard, I prayed about it, whether I should even be nominated. And so one night while I was prayer walking, because Fred had already been nominated and Charles Stanley was going to nominate him, I said, man, that's a pretty formidable team there. And so I said, Lord, if you want me to be nominated, have somebody that I know and respect get in touch with me in the next few hours and say, I hope you'll let your name be put forward. So within 24 hours, I had a call from Dr. James Sullivan, who at that time was president of Life, what we call Lifeway now, and Dr. Franklin Pascal, First Baptist Church in Nashville, who had been a Southern Baptist president, and they said, Jim, we hope you'll let your name be nominated. So I knew then, whether I won or lost, that I was supposed to be nominated. And so that was that. And so Charles got up and gave a tremendous, I said, with Charles Stanley, I'll be chosen. And Jack got up, and I don't remember, but he gave one line that I think, because a lot of people didn't know. Both Fred's a wonderful man, and but Adrian was supporting him. And Adrian told me, he said, Jim, he said, I've already told Fred I'm supporting him, but if you get elected, I'll support you, which is Adrian. And so Jack got up and gave the nominating speech for me, and he said the one line, I think, that helped people on the bubble. He said, Jim Henry is one of us. And so we went up to our rooms and waited for the results, and my son-in-law came running in. He says, we're going to Disney World. He said, you've been elected president. And I couldn't hardly believe it. So my wife.
Going to Disney World in context couldn't have meant anything to you.
I know. It's just like, it's better
like
than
two exits down.
But that was a big deal. So we got on our knees and thanked the Lord and had the joy and privilege of being a president for two terms and loved it and got to come and preach here when you were just beginning your tenure.
We're going to talk about that. Because the day you were elected was a very, very difficult day for me, because the Alumni Association of Southern Seminary was very liberal, and they went at me with full force there, and it was a bad day. Now, the Lord gave grace, and we prevailed, but we basically had to start from scratch. And you know, I want to go back to the theological issues you mentioned, because you mentioned the historicity of Adam and Eve and of Genesis. I just want students here to recognize that you also said that the dean of that seminary said not one member of the faculty believed in the historicity of Adam and Eve or the first 11 books.
The Old Testament part.
Yeah. What he said. Right. And all I'm saying is I just want folks on this campus to know how deep the theological problem was, and not just there, but here. Which leads me to what was one of the most difficult moments in my young presidency here, which was having you in chapel.
I remember.
Okay. Yeah, I know you do. Well, these folks are about to remember it, too. Because you preached a message. I introduced you. It was a tough time. It was in my first year as president. And it was in your first weeks as president of the convention. And it wasn't so much what happened during the service as after the service. And once you tell this, folks in this room aren't ever going to forget it. But I can't pass about that spot right there without remembering what happened. So share with the folks what happened.
Well, there are several things that happened that whole day. But among some things, during the worship service, people would get up staged walkouts. Just walk out. Some got up and stood up with their backs to the pulpit area during the whole service, just stood up.
We faced that for a long time.
So that was stunning. I couldn't believe people would be that disrespectful to the Lord, whether they agreed with you or not. That stunned me. And then, so I got up to preach, and I preached the message. And when I was over, I stepped down. And several people gathered around me pretty quickly. And one was in the New Testament area. And he came up, it seemed like that close to my face, and began to scream at me. And he said, "Why did you say those kinds? Why did you preach that kind of stuff?" And he started berating me. I thought he was going to hit me. And I just asked the Lord to help me have grace and not say anything. And in a way, they nearly pulled him off of me. And I couldn't but believe. I did not preach anything that was not biblical in my message. I did not preach anything that God had not spoken. And for a man that was a New Testament professor, not me so much, but to tear down the Word of God which I was preaching, that was unbelievable.
The only correction I want to make is that he was a theology professor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it was New Testament.
And had been one of my professors.
Okay.
And was one of my lead antagonists.
I can see why.
So can you tell this? Yeah. Well, can you tell this? I mean, what he was offended by is, I mean, I just have referred to it for 30 years as the turtle story. So,
well, I had a line of several different things. I was saying this and comparing things. And I said, we're living in a society that will preserve turtle eggs and turtles and kill babies in the womb. That's what he took off. That's what he took off on that. He thought I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, he just saying that we're a society that is so confused. We have signs on the beach preserving turtle eggs, you know, while they're killing the unborn. Well, so that happened right about right here.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And then around us, things just went worse. So then I had a professor of Christian ethics walk up. And he walked up and he held up his little finger. And he said, if you cut this finger off, it's human life. Saying something's human life is saying nothing. I just had the sense to say, your severed finger is not and never was going to be a baby. The unborn child is. And so anyway, it went from bad to worse. It was like a chain effect. And but you know what? I thought, oddly enough, it might have helped you a bit.
It helped me a lot.
It was a clarifying moment.
It verified what we felt was happening in the whole Southern Baptist Convention. And thankfully,
yeah,
that changed. And you were the vanguard of that change. And you took a lot of pressure, and you and Mary, a lot of heat, anger, loneliness. You were sabotaged and stabbed. And I'm not saying it because you're sitting here. I know it. And God helped you stand tall. And I thank God that you folks stood in the gap when some other people were folded. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. By God's grace, just think of what it means to sing in this chapel now. See this choir up here, and just see the life on the campus. And it's just, yeah, I mean, to say the Lord's blessings beyond anything we could have imagined. And a part of it was by the election of trustees. And when you were president of the SBC, you know, you appointed a committee and committees that eventually appointed trustees. And this is proof positive of why that matters. And why that has to continue, why we have to have continued election of trustees by the convention who understand what's at stake. And I'm afraid the longer we get from turtle incidents, the easier it is for the SBC to forget that those issues are always out there. And by the way, we confront them out there, but we don't confront them in here. We this is where the truth is loved and sustained. And part of the reason why I wanted to have this conversation was just that one turtle incident, because I think you and Mary and I may be the last people in this room who were here at the time. And I don't want that knowledge just to pass away. But, you know, as I've known you over the years, you've been so gracious, and I would drop in on you, and we would, and of course later when I was president here, during the time you're president, we did many things together, and I saw your leadership as president in the SBC, and you continued to encourage throughout all the years. And you know, one of the things is that because Mary and I from Florida, we were there a lot, we saw what happened, we saw how the Lord blessed, and you know, you had some really interesting experiences at the First Baptist Church. And so one of the things is that in Orlando, it was kind of a magnet for all kinds of things.
For sure.
For sure. Including some quack Christianity.
Yes.
Yep.
A lot of things.
And prosperity preachers.
Yes.
And Benny Hinn.
Yes.
Yep. I don't know how many of the folks here. And so one of my favorite stories about you is your car ride with Benny Hinn. And so, I mean, it's like a road movie, you know, Route 66, Jim Henry and Benny Hinn in a car, but not just any car. So please tell the story.
Well, Benny had a church in Orlando at the same time. So he calls up one day and he says, I'd like to take you to lunch. I said, oh, I'd love to do that. So he pulls up in front of the church and he comes in to get, and I meet him in the welcome center. And so I go out there, and he said, out there's a Rolls Royce.
An antique. And it was 16-cylinder Rolls Royce.
Yeah, it was a Rolls Royce, Rolls Royce. I mean, it was a top-of-the-line Rolls Royce. And I thought it was somebody else's car. He says, let's go. I said, where? He said, that's my car. I said, it is. He said, yeah, get in. So we get in, and I'm sitting in, first time in my life, I'm sitting in a Rolls Royce. So we're going down I-4, and we going along down there, and so he said, you want to drive this thing? I said, yeah. So we pull over, and he runs around, lets me get in the driver's seat, and so I start, but then I got scared. I thought two things. What if I wreck it, number one? Number two, what if somebody in my church or somebody watches on television sees me driving Benny Hinn in a Rolls Royce? See, I knew that preacher was scraping it under the... You know, I said, Lord, don't let anybody knows me see me doing this. So we're driving on. Benny says, we're running out of gas.
The thing got like 4 miles to the gas.
Yeah, I mean, it was a clunker. It was a big thing. He said, we're on empty. We're trying to station. So in those days, they had stations, you know, you could self-serve or they would serve you. So I'm driving, so we pull into the service station, so I jump out. He said, where are you going? I said, put gas in here. He said, son, you're driving a Rolls Royce. You get back in here and let them put it in there.
Right.
I said, okay.
So he used to address people, he'd say, brother.
Yeah.
Brother.
Bill Bright and I saw him in a bookstore one time, and he talked to us, and so he said something to Bill. He said, Dr. Bright, he said, would you help mentor me? And he said, you and Pastor Henry? And we said, yeah, we'd be glad. He said, I'd like to meet with you regularly and let you all share with. So we both, Dr. Bright and myself, both volunteered to help with Benny, but he never called us.
Well, he just named it and claimed it, brother.
That's right.
He got it. All he needed was that one conversation. He got everything. I don't know how many people in this room will remember Benny Hinn, but he was at one point, and that prosperity theology was so blatant, name it, claim it, dream it, you know, whatever. And it was like you can't believe he actually lives like this. But then Dr. Henry told me, no, he lives like that.
Yeah, he did. I started to name and claim it too if I get a Rolls Royce, but I didn't. Didn't work.
Yeah, that didn't work with Baptist deacons. That's not a prayer they're going to pray with you in faith. You know what I mean? Well, time is running out. I just want to thank you for your generosity of spirit, but I want to ask you if you If you had a parting word, just in finishing your term as trustee, and speaking to the faculty and the students, both of the seminary and the college, and the others who are here, just even from where you're sitting right now, I want to invite you just to share a word from your heart with these folks.
So I don't get to go to the pulpit, right?
Stay. I'm happy for you to go to the pulpit,
but
whichever you'd rather do.
I like to stand up.
Well, that's fantastic. Okay. Do that. Thank you.
Dr. Moe asked me to give a final charge to you a few minutes, because I know soon some of you will be graduating, and some of you are going to face a lot of things in your family or home or the future. And I try to think of a word that I try to pass on to you. I've had the privilege of being a pastor for 64 years, and I've seen God's faithfulness and goodness. So I said, what can I say to my brothers and sisters, faculty, trustees, and others who are in the journey of life? And this passage is the one I like to leave with you. That's meant so much to me, particularly in recent years. And Moses is getting ready to take the people over into the promised land. And so in Exodus chapter 33, these words: if you're pleased with me, teach me your ways so that I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people. And the Lord replied, my presence will go with you and I'll give you rest. And so my word from the word to you this morning is the presence. His presence. Through the scripture, you see the psalmist talked about his presence. Jude talked about his glorious presence. Jesus said, I am with you always, even to the end of the world. And so that sense of his presence, I want you to carry with you. His presence carried the children of Israel through. They saw this was a promise. They saw his provision. They saw his power. They saw his protection. And they saw his peace. And so those things God gave to Moses, and he'll give to you. Because you're going to have some hard times. You're going to have some times that's going to be very difficult for you. You're going to not be understood. You're going to be hurt. You're going to be disappointed. People are going to betray you. It's not easy out there. I think it's tougher now to pastor a minister now than it's ever been, but it's also the most exciting time to be a pastor or in ministry. I've often said, Lord, if I believed in reincarnation, let me use this. Can you give me this mic? Yeah. If I believed in reincarnation, I'd say, Lord, give me 1,000 lives and let me be a pastor for 1,000 times. Because I love pastoring, preaching, and shepherding God's people. And your president and Mary. Sometimes Dr. Moeller may give you a sense of being aloof. But I want to tell you, he's got a shepherd's heart. These two people have shepherd's heart. And you've got to have shepherd's heart. And when you shepherd people, whatever capacity you may find yourself in, three things to remember in the presence of God. I asked R.G. Lee one time, who was at Bellevue for many years, I said, Dr. Lee, what would you tell a young preacher? He didn't pause for a minute. He said, preacher, he said, stay in the Word, stay on your knees, and close to the people. And that stayed in my mind. And I've tried to do that. I haven't always succeeded, but I wanted to do that. And if you'll keep that in your mind and in your life, through the heartaches, the disappointments, the mountains and the valleys and all those things that happen to us in ministry, and remember his presence. My peace I give to you. And stay faithful. Stay faithful. Gary Chapman, I don't know if you remember this story or not. Gary Chapman went up to Lottie Moon's grave. Did you know this story? Lottie Moon, our great missionary who started the Lottie Moon Christmas offering, she was sent back home after being in China for many years. She came back. They sent her home because she was dying. She got to, I believe it was Singapore or Hong Kong, and she was about 80 pounds. She lost. She had, was starving because of the famine going on in China. And she died before she got home. This courageous woman helped us get the Light and Moon Christmas offering that we all Adventists give to. Gary Chapman, so many of you read Gary's book, Five Love Languages, and a wonderful counselor and author, just recently said that he was so moved by Lottie Moon and her story of sacrifice and what she did for the gospel. He said, I want to go see where she was buried. And so he said, I went to Crewe, Virginia. And I went to this cemetery and I walked around trying to find it. And finally I found it. I thought it'd be a big, nice monument, really decorated. And this is where, this is Lottie Moon, Southern Baptist missionary. And he said, it wasn't that way. He said, I found a very small, simple monument. And on the monument was her birth date and her death. In three words. Faithful unto death. And he said, I wept. And that's what I pray for you. And for me. And for us. To realize His presence. And be found faithful unto death. God bless you, my brothers and sisters. And we'll see you here or there. It's a joy and a privilege to serve Jesus and to serve this wonderful school. Thank you, Dr. Moore.